about the good things to come. Today, we get to learn about competitive video gameplay from Ron Hamlin. He is the owner of Virtual Reload, an esports and events company located in Greenville, South Carolina. Esports is seen as a form of sports with organized teams, virtual coaches, professional coaches, and world-class players. The industry provides a brand new experience for younger generations captivated by this new sport. Today, Ron will join us to help us unpack why everyone should take note. Help me welcome Ron Hamlin. Welcome, Ron and Evan.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Since we have two members participating today and two wonderful guests, would you be kind in introducing yourself and what role you represent at Virtual Reload?
Absolutely. My name is Evan McGraw. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Virtual Reload and Ron's business partner.
And I am Ron Hamlin, founder and CEO of Virtual Reload.
Can you take us back to the history of Virtual Reload? How did the esport gaming company and your interests come into your path? How did you take that idea from conceptualization to launching a company that represents a $1 billion industry?
Yeah, so I was trying to come up with a new business idea for this area. We're in Greenville, South Carolina. My initial thought was just running something like a modern LAN center with high-end gaming PCs. Had not known about what esports was at the time, and I went to a gaming event here in town called the Southeast Game Exchange, and I met a shoutcaster, Jordan Fitzpatrick, what a shoutcaster is the person that calls out the events that's going on within an esport game. Similar to what you might experience with your sports announcer for basketball or football or any other title like that. And he told me all about what esports was and the opportunity that exists. And at the time, there was maybe around 100 colleges in the nation that had programs and scholarships. And I saw that as an immediate opportunity to help elevate youth into higher education.
And Evan, what is your relationship with esports?
So I have a technology and business development background, and in the technology company that I worked with prior to meeting Ron, we had sponsored several professional esports players and also had the opportunity to sponsor other esports events as well. And I grew up playing games just like Ron, and saw that there was definitely a lack of infrastructure around helping players who are good at esports to excel and then find opportunities utilizing their skills. And so when I met Ron at a networking event, we shared the same vision, and the rest is history, as I say.
So for those who are new and learning about this particular industry in the type of sports, what is the general demographic in terms of the gender ratio, the age group? How young are the competitors?
That's a broad question. We actually see about 50-50 female and male players in the overall world of esports. So they're pretty much right split in half. The age group is anywhere from mid-teens to mid-20s or thereabouts.
How are these students initially introduced to esports? Is it through a social group, or are there members from your organization that goes out and per se lobbies in these educational districts?
Yeah, that's the second is really what it comes down to. So kids probably know about esports before their parents do and before their school does. But there's a stage where they're just finding the game they want to play. But then when they really lock into something, the opportunity for them to get involved in an organized team is at this point in time somewhat limited at the high school or middle school level, because there's not a lot of adaptation into the schools for this. So that's one of our roles, is to educate the school systems and show them how this can be good for their kids, because it's a really great attraction for the kids. We see growth in GPA. We see greater attendance in school whenever they do join an organized team.
And Evan, what are some of the challenges that you foresee in the industry for new companies and other interested people who want to invest in it? Is there a high return on investment up front, or is this something that you play for the long run?
It's definitely the latter. And also the biggest issue with getting esports programs up off the ground is that there isn't the same buy-in as more traditional sports for esports. It's not seen as physical activity or something that is really invested in by some of the current institutions. So schools don't really have a strong esports presence. The Parks and Rec departments, for example, don't really have a strong esports presence. So a lot of it is greenfield. So what we're trying to do in addition to creating these programs is really educating everybody about the benefits of esports and how adding an extracurricular can really help serve a really underserved community right now of players who are good at esports, not necessarily athletic enough in order to make other teams, so to speak. So at the high school, middle school, or elementary school level. So what is our biggest challenge right now is informing the people who hold the purse strings, right, who have the ability to invest in these programs, giving them to invest in the players as well.
When selling the idea of esports, what are some factors or studies that you rely on? Do you rely on cognitive studies, health and wellness, compared to selling the idea of bringing basketball to a community?
That's a great question. So we have relied on some studies from the national at Ron Helmy. What's the NACE?
NACE is at
National Association of Collegiate Esports.
Yep. Esports. And then there's also the Federation of Esports. The Esports Foundation, I believe, is the other one. That's the one that has all the high school attendance kind of studies going on.
Yes, absolutely. And so they have work together with some research organizations and found that Ron had already mentioned them, that there are cognitive benefits to being on an esports team. It increases the average GPA for all the players. There's also an increase in the attendance of players at their respective schools when they know that there is something to play for, like a spot on the team, for example, being coached up in that particular game. So I would say, we rely on those entities who have been around for a little while, but haven't quite got the traction for, helping these programs or these institutions create these programs. And so that's the gap that we're trying to fill.
In terms of the logistics of the competitive video game play, how does it work? Are there players divided into teams, or is it an individual sport?
That depends on the title we're talking about, and there are both. So a game like Smash Brothers would be an individual game, so it's one-on-one. But a game like Rocket League or League of Legends would be three on a team or five on a team, depending on which game. So then also the genre of titles are spread across multiple game styles. You do have your traditional sport titles, so like Madden for football, NBA 2K for basketball, and you play with those teams to compete as well.
So going back to one of your earlier questions about the barriers, there are a lot of different variations of esports, as Ron had just mentioned. So if you're going to an institution and saying that you like to help set up an esports program, they're more than likely going to assume that, okay, we'll just tack on esports to our athletic department. But because there are so many different types and styles of games, what we're really suggesting to them is starting a whole new esports department. So, it requires different types of coaches that have different types of skills and administrators and things like that. So there is a little bit of a barrier to entry there. But it offers a lot of opportunities as well. You can have just as many kids involved in an esports program as you could have in your entire athletics department.
Because there are some sports that accommodate the special needs audience. Is there a certain type of accommodation available, or does it even exist in the sport at the moment?
I would say that there is an accommodation, maybe not necessarily from the perspective of the organized esports overall, but the access to get into playing such a game. There are multiple ways that someone with some sort of disability can still actively play all of these titles. They have adaptive controllers. I've actually, I came across a Twitch feed of a gamer who looks like, I believe he's a quadriplegic, and he plays games with a straw, essentially. And he plays very well. He plays very fast-paced with what first-person shooter games doing that. So there's multiple ways that people with disabilities can still participate.
And the wonderful work that you guys are doing through Virtual Reload is also welcoming sponsors. Does most of that money go to the college scholarships, or are there other different ways of raising money for the scholarship?
Well, at the moment, the scholarships that exist for the colleges are either provided by the colleges themselves, similar to what they would provide, say, a football or basketball player. But then there are also other programs. We don't yet provide our own funding for scholarships, but that is something we are wanting to get into.
I noticed that you have a few coaches represented on virtualreload.com. What are the prerequisites for these coaches joining your organization, and what exactly do they do when training / coaching your players?
So, prerequisites that we look for when we're interviewing coaches is having, obviously experience in the particular title that they're coaching. And again, we try to really specify, which coaches are belong to which title, because you really need to have invested quite a bit of time in the mastery of that particular game. So, for example, if there are 40 some odd esports out there, we'll have a specific coach per title. And we'd also like to see that they have some kind of experience working with children, either in an educational or athletic background. A lot of our coaches do. They've coached other sports in the past. Many of our coaches, especially the ones that we're working with now, have experience as professional esports players, and also have experience coaching in other at other schools and other professional organizations around the world. And so, part of what we're doing is, helping coach up esports players so that they can have additional opportunities later on. And we're also fulfilling that role of being the additional opportunity for people who used to be really good at esports and, now are no longer in the competitive circuit, but would like to continue working within the industry. They can, join up with us as, either a coach or a manager, or do some kind of internal administration, and continue to utilize those esports skills that they were able to hone.
Because you referenced the global presence of the sport, at the moment within the United States, is there a certain saturated population that is very receptive to it?
I would say it's definitely concentrated around the metro areas because of the infrastructure that you need in order to put on a good esports event. However, that doesn't preclude people who are more remote. However, the denser populated areas have greater opportunity of finding esports players. What we've found right now is that there are pockets in the U.S. that are highly concentrated with esports professionals. That would be California, Texas, here in the Southeast, in the Greenville, Atlanta metro area. And then, of course, in the Northeast, in the New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts area. But when it comes to the proliferation of esports, the U.S. is really behind, especially in Korea, China, Japan, those places where, again, there's a lot of infrastructure already built up. There's been a lot of just cultural influences around being good at technology and esports in general. So we actually do have a little bit of catch up to do, but we're going to get there.
If a student is listening at the moment and they're wondering, what is the investment for them? Is it a sport that costs money for them to continue investing in terms of practice, buying the games, or attending the events?
There is a bit on that end. The titles, there are several titles that are long running, if you will. But there's also the potential of brand new games coming out that would have to be purchased. But their investment is also a time investment they need to put in, just like you would any other sport. The practice time, it would be really a really good idea for them to have some sort of a coach that would be able to teach them more along direct routes. And then, of course, attending events. So there are typically tournaments of pretty much every game title outside of organized esports that they should be able to join. And a lot of those do have a bit of a fee attached to them. It's kind of a combination of monetary investment and time investment for them.
If you had to pick anything that you would like to change in the industry, what would it be and why?
I almost want to say player representation. That is one thing that so on a lot of these professional esports teams, so these are teams where the players are paid to be on the team. They are paid a living wage or beyond in order to be on the team. But it is such a pressure related situation that they can potentially be kicked off the team if they do not perform well enough to stay there. And so I believe there have been situations where even, a single bad season or a single bad game, people can be dismissed. So whereas in like football or any of those other sports, you've got a contract between player and team that has a level of guaranteed funds and or time. I think there needs to be some sort of representation like that for the players in esports to make it a more inviting space for them.
Evan, do you have any thoughts?
Absolutely. And so, I think that problem will eventually be solved once more investors enter the esports space, so that there's more opportunities for those players. Right now, it's very cutthroat because there aren't that many slots available on professional teams, and they're all, like Ron said, under pressure to produce. So, yeah, if there's something that can be done about, I don't know, like players, organizations, or associations like there are in all of the major sports that can help negotiate long-term contracts and things like that. I think that would really go a long way. But one of the major things that I'd like to see change, and is one of the things that we're working on, is more opportunities at the lower levels. Getting players involved in organized esports a lot sooner, so that they're better trained coming out, and there are more opportunities for them at the higher levels.
Virtual Reload is also our events company. How many events do you host throughout the year, and what would be considered a large headcount?
So we have hosted quite a few. We're probably talking about one event a week on average for us right now. And then we've had an event with 250 people. No, not that many. Sorry, I think it was like 150 people that had come, and that's a pretty good turnout for us.
Some of the events I know in sports are scheduled way ahead in advance. It could be up to a year or beyond. How far in advance are you planning your events that people need to plan to attend?
Anywhere from 1 month to sometimes 4 months ahead, we'll have things on the calendar.
Yeah, that's nowadays. It's definitely helped to have several events under our belt now, so that we can make organization go a lot smoother.
Are there any new initiatives and projects that you're working on that people should keep an eye out on?
Well, we're starting to get more into working with colleges directly, providing them title coaches. That is definitely one of the needs that exists. That a college may have a head coach for the esports team or the esports organization, but they don't have specific game title coaches. So that's one thing we're offering, and we're getting more into that space. And then we are also planning a couple of major events for the summer. We're partnering with the Southeast Game Exchange to run their Smash Brothers tournament this year in the middle of July.
Absolutely, yeah, and I would also say, private leagues as well. So you have year-round leagues for other sports that are run independently from a school, and it's mostly geographical. So we're looking at setting up leagues geographically that kids can join in order to get some experience, both coaching and playing in weekly games and larger scale tournaments. So if you would have any listeners who would like to start up a league in their local area, or currently belong to a college or university that has a program, or you're thinking of starting a program and would like some help getting that started, and then also some help finding a coach for that, we can definitely help out in this area.
Because the sport is so much in demand and you have partnered with at least a running list and it's growing of 20 universities and more, I'm sure they're all accredited. Are you selling to them or are they trying to get on your roster to participate?
We are currently selling to the colleges. Yeah, we what that is one of the things we are planning to do in the future, of hosting some conferences. But at the moment, we're more along the lines of trying to gain some collegiate clients and provide them that.
Because of the work that you're doing that is gaining recognition, even on a global stage, what are some incentives for corporations to become a sponsor?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we have a very unique audience right now that isn't being reached by advertisements or sponsorships of other venues, so to speak, because they, again, are a community that has largely gone, unnoticed, so to speak. You can find them, on Twitch or YouTube and in Discord servers right now. They're a very large community, but again, aren't really being, advertised to as much as they possibly could be. So if you're looking for a specific age range, starting in elementary school up to, 35, I would say is a pretty average gamer, then a sponsorship with Virtual Reload, either an event, locally, or any type of equipment that a gamer would like to, purchase at some point. There are a lot of, apparel companies out there and equipment companies as well, PC, console, all the peripherals, keyboards, mice, headsets, you name it, they would have a great audience that is currently going relatively untapped.
For any parent out there listening at the moment and their child wants to get started, what would be the first two steps that you would recommend them to seek out to participate?
And that is a great question. And again, there's not many resources out there where you can just go, hey, esports in my local town, right? but, right now is word of mouth mainly. So, I have a son, he's 7 years old. If I wanted to get him into esports right now, I'd ask him, what are some of the games that the kids in your school are playing right now? Ask them what kind of systems that they have. I know right now the Nintendo Switch is very popular in that age range, and there are lots of esport games that are associated with the Switch, specifically like Super Smash Brothers, for example. That would be a good title to get them started in. I would encourage somebody in that age range just to find the system and the type of game that you like. Whether it's the battle royales or the shooters or one of the fighting games or one of the sports related games, somebody a little bit older, there will be some more word of mouth, especially at the high school or collegiate range. And typically by then, they know what types of games that they like. They know what types of systems that they're on. So they would have asked for a PlayStation or Xbox by this point. And you'll know as a parent, like where they spend most of their time. If they're a PC gamer, they're spending most of their time on the computer. And so you're just asking them like what titles that they're interested in. And then, you can, search by that title for your area, like League of Legends, things like that, and find matches for them to attend. Right now, that is one of the things that the esports community does do well is have invitational tournaments. So once you know what title that they're interested in, then you can start looking up like, well, are there any invitational tournaments? And then probably, especially if you're you don't live in proximity of a metropolitan area, you might have to travel quite a while. But if you are close by, let's use League of Legends for example. There are a lot of invitational tournaments for League of Legends that they could possibly participate in. There are also some online organizations as well that you can do a virtual tournament. So I would start there with what type of gamer they are, console or PC, and figuring out which titles that they really gravitate towards. And then if they're really talented, you can also look up esports coaching, and hopefully Virtual Reload would be one of the first things that pops up Google search. If we're doing this search engine optimization thing correctly.
Regarding the games themselves, does Virtual Reload create any of them? If not, is there a vetting process of someone who assesses which games are going to be included in the competition?
So we don't create any of the games, do all the guidance and that sort of thing. The vetting side comes down to the age group we're talking about, right? So high school and middle school would be games that are not quite as realistic, if you will. So like they might choose Fortnite as a battle royale or Rocket League for soccer, right? And then when you get to that college and beyond level, then you'd be talking about things like Call of Duty, where they're a little bit more realistic. So that vetting side comes down to what is the organization we're talking to? What is their desire for the image they want to put forth? Because even certain colleges will only do certain titles depending on their the image they want to have.
And hypothetically, have you run into any scenario where certain games are considered to be too violent or they don't serve the end user's need that they may be banned?
Not so much overall. all, like, we kind of go by what is the industry doing as far as the games we're going to provide services in. So it's really like there's kind of a known set of about 20 games that are at that level, and then it's just a matter of picking from those titles what this particular organization wants to run games in. To, again, depending on who we're talking to.
Yeah, we kind of follow the stream in that respect. So the esports industry overall will typically decide what they want to put their money behind by user count. So they know at any given time how many players are playing online matches against one another and things like that. And so they know that's where the advertisement dollars are, and those are the popular titles at the moment. And usually the colleges and universities will follow suit because they want to be associated with those titles. And so for, you know, high school, middle school, we'll say, you know, these are the titles that are currently popular at the next level where you might be able to get a scholarship. So we would recommend, you know, if you were into battle royales, for example, these particular titles here would be the ones that you should, you know, concentrate on practicing and getting coaching in.
A bit of focus on the coaches. Are they the ones who play the role of moderators in the official competitions to regulate people's performance, to rate and rank it, compared to the physical sports where people could see if there is a foul?
No, the coach's role is not that. In fact, in our current situation with our college client, some of the matches don't allow the coaches to be actively speaking with the players in the middle of the match. However, so as far as moderating side of it, there is someone who will typically view or spectate that game to confirm that nobody is doing anything that shouldn't be done. And that's its own role, but that does exist, kind of like a referee.
Yeah. It's much more difficult to cheat if you're using, you know, equipment provided by a school or an organization. But unfortunately, that is one of the barriers to entry for esports right now. A lot of the schools aren't doing that, so they're relying on a lot of the equipment being brought by the players themselves, which does make it a little bit easier to cheat. So tournament organizers, which is one of the things that Virtual Reload does, where a tournament organizer will typically have moderators and people viewing the streams of the players to make sure that none of that is happening. But that is typically on the shoulders of the tournament organizer. For colleges right now, there are other outsourced companies that are providing tournament organization services. Like the Peach Belt, for example, the particular conference will have outsourced that to companies like Battlefy, I think, is one of them that provides strictly tournament organization services in those types of personnel.
Do you have final thoughts on Virtual Reload and any events coming up that you would like to share with the audience?
Our primary goal is to bring esports down to the level of the middle and high school age, to kind of give them that leg up into organized esports. If you go from high school without having been on a team into the college scene, and now all of a sudden you have to be coached and you may not have been used to that, that can be a difficult curve to cross. So that's something we want to bring in at a lower age. And then the other side of this upcoming events, we actually have events planned with Dave & Buster's in Concord, North Carolina. So I think our next date is going to be March 11th. That will be up there. And then the other big date to keep in mind is July 15th here in Greenville. The Southeast Game Exchange will be a massive, Smash Brothers tournament that we'll be hosting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, to add on to that, we're looking to also provide opportunities for players of esports who are good at esports, but not necessarily have found a home with other extracurricular activities. And a lot of the schools that we've talked to that have seen a need for this and understand how important it could be, say that, agree that there is definitely an underserved market out there for young people who could greatly benefit from participation in an extracurricular activity and just don't have the same opportunities as some of the other more athletically inclined kids. So we want to be able to even the playing field there. So, if you know a gamer who's, talented that could potentially benefit from, an opportunity like that, let us know. We'll help you create a program in your area. If you belong to a school and you'd like to start an esports program there, we can also help consult on that. If you would like to, help see esports succeed and we're looking for an investment opportunity, we'd also be interested in talking to you as well.
And people are welcome to go to virtualreload.com.
Absolutely. Yes, that's our main website.
Yes.
And Ron, what are the social media handles?
Twitch and Facebook are The Virtual Reload, and then Twitter and Instagram are just Virtual Reload.
Thank you, Evan and Ron, for sharing
You're welcome.
Our overview of Virtual Reload.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Train sound and loud, ride on the peace train. Cuba, 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 come on, peace train. It's peace train, holy road. Everyone jump upon the peace train. Cuba, 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 come on, peace train. Now get your bags together. Go, bring your good friends too. It's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. Now come and join the lift. You know, it's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding loud, right on the peace train. Ooh, ooh, ah, dee, ah, ooh, ah.